Ladies and gentlemen, for tonight's entertainment, a live reading of the short story, Peace, Love, and the State of the Economy. Now, please join me in giving a warm, warm welcome to Ann Penhausen.
All right. Thank you. All right, everybody, shut up. Excuse me. Love, glorious love. Unrequited, maybe. Non-reciprocal, perhaps. Blindly one-sided? You fucking bet. But if all went according to my proactive yet sensitive designs, this would not be the case for long. My one true love, the spellbinding Miss Barbie O'Shea, and I were having our share of courtship troubles, to be sure. She being friend and family to the architects of the new ruling regime, and I, now nothing more than a roving vagabond cad, could not, for the time being, see eye to eye. Understand now that the political climate is in a state of wanton entropy. Power struggles often ensue, and the reins change hands with mind-boggling frequency. It is very Montague and Capulet, very Hatfield and McCoy, very Dean Wareham and Damon and Naomi. I suddenly found myself, on the day in question, standing in the penetrating aura of the earth-shattering Barbie O'Shea, exiled, once again, to the wrong side of the tracks. She'd always been a coy vixen, even in the most stable of times, and as I attempted to woo her in the traditional fashion of plying her with alcohol, then pawing her temple of flesh like a mad beast, she struck me upon the nose. I was taken aback by this break in my personal protocol. I advanced again, but to no avail. She struck again, with stars winking through my field of vision and a sickening liquid agony washing through my most tender regions. My honorable attempts had been nullified with the definitive slumping of my person to the marble pathway of the private gardens. She'd given me one hell of a shot to the nuts. Now you see, my one true love works in symbols. I took the shot to the nuts and her harsh verbal rebukes as a wake-up call from my beloved. She was practically begging this temporarily neutralized rapscallion to mend the wounds of our fragile new love. So after a brief month of contemplation and soul-searching, manifested through long hours of moping and intense jags of shameless weeping, I vowed to reclaim our romance. I resolved to leave my new dwelling places of refuse-ridden alleyways, $10-an-hour flop houses, and underbridge bum towns, and make amends. It would take a series of subtle gestures to break us, the stellar Miss Barbie O'Shea and me, from the malaise of our current estrangement. Gestures that say, "Hey, baby, I care." Under the cover of darkness, I crept to the parking lot of my one true love's apartment building. I understood that our main weakness was a lack of understanding. She did not know the real me, did not know the rigors that I had endured that had brought this alienated mercenary to such a lowly state. So I reached out to her by keying the entire text of Dante's Purgatorio into the banana yellow paint job of her 2002 Volkswagen Beetle. I managed to etch the final letter of the first three quarters of my abridged paperback edition into the center of her right headlight. My litany of devotion, though, was incomplete. I had run out of room. Her response arrived the next day by courier. I watched helplessly from the window of my second floor efficiency as a large, bald moron with watery, vacant eyes decimated my own 1996 Ford Aspire with a crowbar. I watched as he worked quickly, efficiently, with wicked malice. In no time, my car was nothing more than a scattered mess of beaded windshield glass, warped fiberglass, and random, indiscernible parts. I thought I could make out the air filter, but I couldn't be certain. The large bald moron paused for a mere moment in his labors to shoot me a look of absolute and total hatred. His message delivered, he threw his crowbar into a puddle of transmission fluid, clink, and shuffled off, grunting beneath his breath. My one true love's symbols were deeply hidden, but no less imperative for me to decipher. I pondered for days. Did the destruction of my car signify her disgust with our mechanized society? Was she blaming the unreliability of technology and the corresponding laziness made manifest from modern convenience for our lack of understanding? Was the crowbar really a gentle hand reaching out, grasping blindly in the maelstrom for something, anything of substance to which to cling? And what of the large, bold moron? What purpose did he serve? What idea was he to convey? It wasn't like I didn't know the guy. He'd beaten me senseless in a gymnasium once. Surely the goddess like Barbie O'Shea had been aware of this detail. And why the hate, the shuffling, the grunting? Admittedly, much of this episode had gone way over my head. My one true love was the deepest female I had ever encountered, and my arousal reached an even more fevered pitch. The game was now afoot. I set out again under the cover of darkness, only this time I broke into her apartment. I scrawled on her vanity mirror in eyeliner pencil this ode of my own heartfelt composition, which I'm going to read to you right now. And this is exactly how I wrote it. Oh, honey licking baby, won't you be mine? Won't you be mine? Won't you be mine? Oh, lamb chops, slurping mama, can't you gimme? Can't you gimme? Can't you gimme? Your good honey licking lamb chops, slurping stuff. Give it up to me, give it up to me, give it up to me. Oh, you makes my stuff hurt too. Use a foxy broad, how's about that? Use a sexy minx, what do you think of that? Come on, lady, come on, lady, come on, lady. Put it out. Hugs and kisses, hugs and kisses, hugs and kisses. I'd wanted to say so much more, but I had again run out of room. I spirited away into the night via the fire escape. My one true love, in her own symbolic way, was trying to convey her messages of goodwill to me as well. Her response to my vanity mirror confession was to have me arrested for breaking and entering. It was a simple bust, really. I mean, my fingerprints were all over the fucking place. The police descended on my person like vultures upon innocent carrion, billy clubs firmly in hand and Miranda rights vacant from their hearts. I took the arrest and the corresponding incarceration as a metaphor for her feelings for me. I had seized her heart, and now that my affiliations were with a non-controlling membership, she resisted. But her resistance was beginning to weaken, to stumble and falter, to lose its very consciousness and equilibrium, and she was beginning to succumb to the nightstick blows of my sincere desire. I could practically feel her inner turmoil. Much later, after the authorities had had their sport, sitting on the cold cement slab of my jail cell, I knew that my low social position, embarrassing lifestyle, as well as my drinking and carousing about the red light district, had left her also to wallow in a hard, bland room of doubt. My musings were interrupted by an explosion of such magnitude it rocked the very foundations of the jailhouse in which I sat. Debris was shaken loose from the ceiling, raining on me like so many of my one true love's intimate messages and playful rejections. The whole building came alive with gunfire and bellowed orders. Troops stormed down the hallway and past my cell. Gunfire roared and bodies fell in sloppy heaps. I became elated. My employment troubles would soon be over. The re-revolution was now in full swing. My cell door opened, and I was given a truncheon. A man wearing my affiliation's colors and crest saluted me, and I dashed into the fray, taking shots at my fleeing captors, feeling the old vibe again, in my element, ensconced deeply in the zone. If only the ballistic Ms. Barbie O'Shea could see what I was doing to her cohorts, then she would know my single-minded devotion to our love. I was splitting open the forces of divisiveness and hate, rendering them powerless against our delicate new love, dashing their soft tissues into vapor against the barren walls of loneliness and despair. Soon I was free of the jailhouse. More explosions rocked the streets and sent men in both colors flying. It was a grand spectacle to behold, those living fireworks. I could see the preternaturally alluring Barbie O'Shea and myself sitting atop a tranquil bluff, hand in hand, Watching this show of sacrifice and beauty, and knowing deep within the very molecules of our physicality that it was all for us to behold, a world bearing witness to a love that would not, could not die. I continued to bash my way through the thronging warriors, urged on by a simple yet holy purpose. Her apartment was only 4 blocks away. She would be waiting for me, hands folded in her lap by the window, waiting for a sign of my return, dressed in something of lace or chiffon or organza, or better yet, leather and rubber. Yes, I would reach her soon, my one true love, the heavenly Ms. Barbie O'Shea. I was the thunder, and she was my lightning. And in much the same way that lightning arcs from the sky to the ground, and on occasion from ground to sky, in much the same way as the pendulum swings to and fro, or how the bipolar's mood switches from uncontrollable elation to dark depression, power structures exchange dominance. Certain associations and institutions fall under the sway of those they once controlled. The gory truncheon in my hand was a symbol of this. And now as I raced down the street, I erupted into my war cry, which was also a serenade to the illuminated apartment window in my sights. I climbed the damaged fire escape, the truncheon clutched in my teeth. Another explosion suddenly rocked the very building I scaled. Brick and mortar ravaged me as the ladder gave way and I fell into a pile of jagged rubble. This would be only a fleeting setback. There she stands, the utterly galactic Ms. Barbie O'Shea, in her gown of pure white. She smiles to me down the length of the aisle, guarded by her phalanx of NFL linemen. She wears this, our wedding day, like a badge upon her soul, and though she is so far away from where I stand, she is the whole world, and thus I am always close to her. The gardens are magnificent, and though a coming storm roils in the clouds to the west, the radiance of my one true love sends sheets of light over the marble pillars and pathway. If only you could see her as I see her. If only. But you can't. Even though her guardians look on me with cold hate and murder in their hearts, the mind-numbing and soul-crushing Barbie O'Shea and I are the only two people in the whole wide world, our souls joined at the hip. I'm so reminded of the day my one true love and I first met. We were guests at a party in the Rose Garden of the White House during the George W. Bush administration. I stood nursing a drink as the ambassador from Saudi Arabia bantered incessantly in my ear. Blah, 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 blah. The crowd parted and I saw her, my one true love, the brutally exquisite Barbie O'Shea, surrounded by her retinue of arena football player bodyguards. My wild warrior's heart leapt, and I approached her shimmering form. I said to her, "Will you marry me? Only if you can kill my arena football player bodyguards," was her husky response. Her words sent me into action. I delivered punches, dagger thrusts, roundhouse kicks, and each in turn the arena footballers fell. They'd been a strong lot, but not the best, not ready for the big time. When the last one had been thrown to the ground, I stood heaving before her, my Armani suit torn at the arm, my breathing ragged. Alien blood splattered upon my hands and my face. Then she smiled that smile I see right now, and again I'm called into action. It's our wedding day, and to affix our mortal matrimonial bonds, I must again prove myself. I must break through her guard, but now they're the real thing. Known entities with big contracts right out of the show that is professional sports. My silver lame tuxedo glimmers in her radiance as I dart down the marble walkway. I meet my first obstacle with a monumental thud, but a right chop to the pro's bull neck drops him like a sack of dough. The others rush forward, forming a series of lines I must penetrate to reach my prize. Thunder roars overhead, mixes with the impact of flesh on flesh. I'm already breaking a sweat. A wrist is already shattered, but I continue to fight my way, pick my shots, and drop my obstacles into pools of their own blood and bile. I'm almost there. Her arms reach for me. Her smile permeates. Then, an unexpected check on my right. Hands grip me, then don't. I'm aloft, flying up and away from the marble gardens. I soar into the clouds and coming storm. There's quite a show up here. I dodge the bolts of lightning as best I can, but they are many, and I am just too attractive. She'll forgive my missteps, my one true love. She always does. As I sail away into the lightning storm, I do not despair, for I know she's down there waiting for me, no matter how long the descent proves to last. Because no matter how far I fly, I'm flying into her, this vast sky full of neon-tinged menace. I can feel the charge in the air. The delighted electrons stand every fiber of my being in tucks on end. She is my Penelope, my Helen of Troy, my Serena Williams, my Venus too. She's my electric sky. The end.
Thank you all for joining us tonight. Peace, Love, and the State of the Economy was written and produced by Ann Pendleton for MuseonCast. Drive home safely, and remember to love one another, alright?